My name is Mike Malloy. Welcome to the program tonight. Thanks for tuning in. We have a guest tonight, next hour. We don't normally don't have guests, but Lee Papa is going to join us. He is the, for those of you who are hip, you know who he is. For those of you who are not quite so hip, he is the Rude Pundit. The Rude Pundit. He is rude. I mean, he is very rude. You can find out all you want to know about him. He has a new video up at my website, MikeMalloy.com. Go to the website. It's right there on the left side, main page. You'll see it. Click on it. Keep the kids away. And if you want to go to his site, it's the, it is rude, no the, rudepundit.blogspot.com. rudepundit.blogspot.com. Check it out. He's going to join us in an hour. Have the dump. Have your finger over the dump button, Kathy, because we have radio station affiliates, right? This hour is sponsored by Glenn from the UK. Is that right? And he is, the message is happy birthday on July 7th, Rose. That's tomorrow. From Glenn in the UK, happy birthday on 7 July, Rose. Oh, isn't that sweet? Wouldn't you like to know all the details of, you know, the message is very cryptic, but it's also rather romantic, isn't it? Happy birthday on 7 July, Rose. It's kind of fitting we have a sponsor this first hour from the UK, because one of the big items I want to talk about tonight is getting a little bit of press here in the United States, but it's the criminality of Rupert Murdoch's news corporation. So far, as far as we know, only in the UK. Real criminality. There is talk. I watched some of the interplay between the British Prime Minister, Cameron, and who's a good friend of Murdoch's number one person at News of the World, which is the tabloid there, and the opposition in the British Parliament. And it's pretty disgusting. I'll get to it in a second. But before we get to that, I caught this from someplace. It's about Casey Anthony, the woman who was found not guilty. She was not found innocent. She was found not guilty of the murder of her two-year-old daughter. Yesterday, the verdict came down. And the question is, what will Casey Anthony do now? And I've stayed away from the story. It is a personal tragedy to this family involved. But it is sadly, horrifically, horribly, disgustingly, it's not a unique story. It just isn't, you know, a parent being charged with the murder of his or her child is horrifically, horribly, disgustingly a common everyday occurrence in this country. I remember when, what was the woman's name, Kathy? Susan, the one in South Carolina, Susan Smith, back in the mid-90s, drove her car or got out of her car and let her car drift into the water in South Carolina, and her two children drowned. And, of course, she was found out. This is back when Newt Gingrich was on a tear, this rancid son of a bitch. And I remember what Newt Gingrich said. He said the murder of these two children was a result of liberal policies, of Bill Clinton and that the Democrats could take responsibility. I mean, as crazed as that statement was, it clearly indicated the psychopathology of Newt Gingrich. Now, the twist to the story was, of course, that her stepfather, who had violently, and there was a record of it, molested her over the years, was a top-ranking member in the South Carolina Republican Party and a heavy-duty contributor to the Christian Coalition. So when that came out, of course, Susan Smith was found guilty and is, even as we speak, serving a life sentence for the murder of her two children. But the filthy pig bastard Newt Gingrich, who made the allegations, made the statements, not allegations, statements, just classic Newt Gingrich drivel. And of course, the press, being the horrors that they are for the most part, no offense to sex workers, picked up on it and allowed this bloated bastard Gingrich to have his day. Newt, you ought to sit down, go shopping or something, but get out of the press. No, as a matter of fact, stay in. But I digress. The murder of children by a sick or psychopathic parent is commonplace in this society. Maybe in all societies. Who knows? I'm getting way afield here. Anyway, Casey Anthony, the woman who is charged with the murder of her daughter. Casey Anthony, and who was acquitted of those charges. And as one of the jurors who has decided to break ranks in Florida said, we did not find her innocent. We found her not guilty as charged by the state. So there's concern now. What will she do? What will she do with the remains of her life, her sad life, if this woman is capable of feeling sadness? And I'm sure she probably is. Well, here's an offer from Vivid Entertainment. Vivid Entertainment. And the co-founder of Vivid Entertainment, one Steve Hirsch, told the garbage website TMZ, you know, the scandal, puke-filled, disgusting TMZ, that he, Steve Hirsch, has offered Casey Anthony a job as a porn star in one of Steve Hirsch's upcoming films. This is what he told TMZ, the garbage, putrid outhouse website. He said, quote, whether you agree with the verdict or not, Casey will want to move forward with her life and has a right to make a living. It's not going to be easy for her, and here it comes. We believe we can help her make the transition into a new life. Only in America, right? Huh? Only in America. An expert in crisis management. What the hell is that? An expert in crisis management said, quote, it seems inevitable that Casey Anthony and her family will try to capitalize on their situation and that they will hire a publicist and perhaps even an agent to identify and sort out immediate opportunities. No doubt her legal counsel will also want to limit her exposure and ensure she is careful of any statements she might make. She could make big bucks, it goes on to say here, by selling her story to, say, oh, I don't know, Fox News. Legal and communications experts told the news organizations that they expect Miss Anthony could make $1 million in a single interview. You ever feel like you need a shower because you live in the United States? I mean, seriously, do you ever get the feeling... and I'm not talking about the garbage bastards and the Christian right. You know, they're sick in their own way. But just the normal, everyday occurrences. Someone is acquitted of the most hideous charges that I can think of. Murdering one's own child. Someone's acquitted of that. And immediately, some bottom-feeding, probably Republican, probably conservative, probably contributor to all the Tea Party organizations and the Libertarian organizations, this piece of human waste from a porn film industry says, well, we'll give her a job. We want to help her on with her career. You ever get the feeling when you wake up in the morning that just the crap that settled on you at night from being in this country needs to be scrubbed off?
Substance, no abuse.
21 past the hour. And don't forget, Rude Pundit coming up. Top of the next hour. Rude Pundit. Lynn in the UK is a sponsor this hour. Wishes a happy birthday on July 7th to Rose. Happy birthday, Rose. Thank you, Glenn. Okay, tabloid newspaper crap. It's bigger than that. Rupert Murdoch has been trying to get controlling share in the UK of major broadcast network there. What is it? Damn, Scott. He already owns. He wants to get British Sky Broadcasting. It's a pay TV company. It's already the largest shareholder in Sky Broadcasting. If it goes through, which it probably will, regardless of the scandal, Rupert Murdoch's power is probably going to be greater when you consider his holdings here in the UK, in Australia, in China. His power will probably be greater than any other person on Earth. Rupert Murdoch is everything that the future should not be. But it doesn't matter what should or should not. And as the Times reports, there's political pressure in the UK bearing down on Rebecca Brooks. She is the top executive of the News Corporation in Britain. Following allegations that one of the News Corporation's newspapers hacked the cell phone, among other, the story just gets worse. I'm just starting here. The cell phone of a 13-year-old girl who was abducted and murdered in 2002 when Rebecca Brooks was the editor of the newspaper. Now, this story is getting to the point where, just like the Glenn Beck garbage mouth, advertisers, major advertisers are pulling out. Ford Motor Company announced today that they are suspending advertising in the News of the World, as are all other major corporations now. Ed Miliband, who is the leader of the opposition Labour Party, said yesterday that Ms. Brooks, quote, should consider her conscience and consider her position, end quote, after the disclosures, which I guess is the British way of saying, get your ass out of town, you goddamn freak. I'm just guessing here, but I don't know. Ed Miliband, the leader of the opposition Labour Party, said it wasn't a rogue reporter. It wasn't just one individual. This was a systematic series of things that happened. And what I want from executives at News International is people to start taking responsibility for this. News International is the News Corporation's British newspaper division. And this woman, Rebecca Brooks, is now the chief executive. Prime Minister David Cameron, a very close friend of Ms. Brooks, took time out from a visit to British troops to lament what he called, quote, a truly dreadful situation. Dreadful. And he added that the police, quote, should investigate this without any fear, without any favor, and without any worry about where the evidence should lead them. Why does the Prime Minister of the UK have to say that the police should investigate without fear? Do you get the point? Do you get the drift? Do you get the tone? The British Prime Minister is making a public statement that the police in England should start an investigation, in this instance, without fear. What would that indicate, Mr. Prime Minister? That without your statement that there may have been fear, the police, probably so, because as the story is developing here, it appears that News Corporation, Rupert Murdoch's UK terrorist organization, has been paying off cops for information that is none of his goddamn business, nor his filthy terrorist organization publishing company. But there's more. Late Tuesday, The Guardian of the UK reported that police would review every highly publicized murder, kidnapping, or assault involving a child since 2001 for evidence of phone hacking by Murdoch's organization. I gotta calm down here. Scotland Yard detectives are also investigating whether the phones of some families of victims of the bombings of three London subway trains and a double-decker bus in 2005 also had been hacked by this filthy bastard Murdoch's organization. In his remarks, Mr. Cameron in the House of Commons did not mention Ms. Brooks. But his comments were notable, according to the New York Times, because like other British politicians, he, the Prime Minister, has cultivated social connections with News Corporation executives like Ms. Brooks and Rupert Murdoch. Why, of course, it was the News Corporation's efforts on behalf of the right-wingers that got Cameron elected to begin with. But there's more. And it gets worse.
Kinds here. Those that bleed the blood and those that work to will it. Can't believe the big screen. There's no justice in the hall. We're all criminals waiting to be called. They say don't step off the sidewalk and don't cross over the line. But we'll serve time at night and the lights begin to dim and the smoke seems to clear. You can't say what you want. We're all criminals here.
Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
25 before the hour. Once again, this hour is sponsored by Glenn from the UK, whose message is happy birthday on July 7th to Rose. Happy birthday, Rose. Thank you, Glenn. The reason I'm talking about the Rupert Murdoch News Corp terrorist a proto-fascist craziness that this entire company, this is a company that gives you Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity and phone hacking of the parents of dead children in the UK. The reason I'm bringing this up is because this man is a terrorist. Rupert Murdoch, by any definition, is a terrorist. And he has such a toehold in this country. And so many people watch the Fox News channel. More so than CNN, more so than MSNBC, sometimes more than both combined, which speaks volumes about the stupidity and the asininity and the filth that the American public will suck up because we Americans have no interest whatsoever in what's going to happen to us in the real world. We don't care. We're following this terrorist Pied Piper, aren't we? Woohoo! Let's talk about weird stuff. God, Murdoch disgusts me. Anyway, the allegations against this terrorist organization center on one of the most sensational Fleet Street stories of the last decade, Fleet Street being their newspaper row. And according to the New York Times, that was the disappearance of Millie Dowler 9 years ago. As the Times says, the case was the subject of many tabloid front pages over the last decade, culminating last month in the conviction of Levi Belfield, a former nightclub doorman, on charges of kidnapping and murder. The allegation that investigators working for the News of the World may have had ordinary people like the Dowlers, the parents, in their sights, has raised the level of alarm in Britain over tabloid newspaper excesses. Oh, come on. Let's not homogenize this and say, oh, well, all the tabloid newspaper. No, we're talking about the Murdoch Terror Organization. Tim Luckhurst, a journalist and professor at the University of Kent in England, said, quote, the Millie Dowler story has taken this from an issue for people who are concerned about media ethics to one that is of broader concern to the general public. News Corporation thought they could put a lid on this, and the lid has blown right off. According to Mark Lewis, a lawyer for the Dowler family, that's the family of this little kid, excuse me, who was she wasn't a little kid. How old was Millie Dowler? It doesn't matter. Let me go on here. Jesus. According to a lawyer for the Dowler family, the News of the World not only intercepted messages left on Millie Dowler's phone by her increasingly frantic family. I think this was the child that was 13. Not only did News Corporation hack into the answering machine and steal the messages, but they also deleted some of those messages when her voicemail box became full so that there would be room for new ones. And then they spent their time listening to those in turn. Well, this confused investigators who were trying to solve the disappearance and eventual rape and murder of this 13-year-old. This confused investigators and gave false hope to Millie's relatives, her parents, who believed the deleted messages showed she was still alive and deleting the messages herself. In a statement, the attorney for this family called the Murdoch Terror Organization's actions, quote, heinous and despicable, end quote. And said the Dowler family, the family of this 13-year-old, had suffered, quote, distress heaped upon tragedy upon learning that the News of the World, quote, had no humanity at such a terrible time, end quote. This is the same terror organization in this country who has spent every single goddamn waking moment since Barack Obama was elected or even got the nomination poisoning the atmosphere in this country, the political atmosphere, poisoning it hour after hour, day after day, minute after minute, destroying. Do you not get it? It doesn't make any difference what the other issues are if we do not have a press that will tell the truth, that will use its First Amendment protection to do its job, we're screwed. And the Murdoch Terror Organization, with its tentacles all over the planet, is the lead fascist terrorist on earth. Do you not get that? Do you not understand the lies, the deceptions, the poison put out for the past 3 years that has gotten this country to the point that people can't even have a goddamn conversation about politics? Has come from this fountainhead of filth, the Murdoch Terror Organization. And back in the UK, these pieces of human waste hack into the answering device of a missing 13-year-old whose body winds up dead, of course, and deletes messages so they can hear more. What a filthy, putrid Murdoch, may you burn in hell. Just fry. According to Times, public revulsion in the UK over the affair has been so intense that a private investigator at the center of the phone hacking, a guy named Glenn Mulcair, felt compelled to provide a statement to The Guardian yesterday, his first public comment in 5 years since the scandal broke. In it, he apologized, quote, to anybody who was hurt or upset, end quote, and said he was speaking up because of the, quote, vilification he and his family had been subjected to in the past 24 hours. Why is he being vilified? Well, Mulcair worked for the News of the World and served prison time for his role in hacking the phones of members of the royal family. And he blamed, quote, relentless pressure, end quote, at the paper for his, well, he calls, the Times calls them mistakes. Let's call them criminal activities. The son of a bitch went to prison. They're not mistakes, New York Times. For his crimes. And he said, quote, there was a constant demand for results, end quote. Now, you want the latest? That was a couple of days ago in New York Times. Here's the latest. This is from Thursday, tomorrow. The Independent of the UK. Families of, this is their headline. Murdoch Empire in Crisis. The subhead, Families of Dead Soldiers. Added to list of likely victims as major advertisers desert News of the World and the British Prime Minister bows to pressure for a public inquiry. The families of dead soldiers. Do you understand? The Guardian said Murdoch's planned takeover of Britain's biggest commercial broadcaster was cast into doubt last night as his newspaper empire battled fresh allegations of hacking more phones of the families of murdered children, and a dozen blue chip companies withdrew advertising from the newspaper. In another damaging day for Mr. Murdoch, in the deepening phone hacking scandal, the communications regulator Ofcom revealed that it was, quote, closely monitoring, end quote, allegations of widespread criminality at News International and said it had a duty to be satisfied that Mr. Murdoch and his top executives were, quote, fit and proper persons, end quote. To control B Sky B. In an emergency debate in the House of Commons, the former Labour Minister Tom Watson accused James Murdoch, Rupert's son and heir, of perverting the course of justice by engaging in a cover-up and called for him to be suspended from the News Corp board. Like father, like son. These people are fascists. Do you not understand that? And they have their Nazi-like claws deep into this country. This country. So that any attempt for any kind of discourse about the issues that are facing this country has been poisoned, perverted, destroyed, twisted by this bastard. That's why I'm so upset. That's why I'm upset. Hours after the Labour MP, Chris Bryant, accused the News of the World of hacking phones linked to the murdered Essex schoolgirl Danielle Jones, the 80-year-old proprietor, that would be Murdoch, gave his personal backing to the paper's former editor and News International's current chief executive, Rebecca Brooks. Of course. Of course. Murdoch's News Corporation shares tanked in New York, falling by nearly 5% at one stage, wiping £180 million from the tycoon's stake. Oh, that's lunch money to this fascist pig.
is a good word. It's More Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Members of Parliament in the UK are demanding that the coalition government of James Cameron pause its approval for News Corporation's bid for full control of B Sky B. Mr. Watson, the opposition leader, told the Commons, quote, James Murdoch and Rebecca Brooks have now have to accept their culpability and they will have to face the full force of the law. Their behavior to the most vulnerable, their knowledge of lawbreaking and their failure to act, their links with the criminal underworld, their attempts to cover up lawbreaking and pay for people's silence tell the world all we need to know about their character. They are not fit and proper persons to control any part of the media in this country. He's referring, of course, to the UK. Their links with the criminal underworld, their attempts to cover up lawbreaking. They should have to face the full force of the law. They're talking about the heir apparent to Rupert Murdoch, the pig that forces Fox News into America's airwaves every day. And then the moronic halfwits in this country who sit there and watch it. Now, The Guardian of the UK says that Jeremy Hunt, the culture secretary, is likely to shrug off the demands and give final approval of the deal tomorrow, which would be Friday. However, the BBC's business editor, Robert Preston, who has faced criticism that he is an unofficial messenger for News International, said B Sky B's independent directors, ones who own the majority share now or the minority share now, would probably demand a higher price because of the risk of Ofcom. I guess that's the British equivalent of the FCC. The risk of Ofcom intervening in all this. David Cameron, the PM, a close friend of Miss Brooks, the CEO of Fox in the UK, Cameron suggested the government of the UK would hold a public inquiry into the scandal. He said, quote, we do need to have an inquiry, possibly inquiries into what has happened. And police are investigating new evidence that under the editorship of Andy Coulson, the Prime Minister's former communications director, the News of the World bribed police officers for information. Do you understand this? Andy Coulson, who is an editor at News of the World, served for a while until I guess he was forced to resign as David Cameron's communications director. Do you see the insidiousness of this? Do you not? Do you not care? I'm just asking, okay? I've spent an hour on this pig. And the reason is because of what they are doing. David Cameron, the PM, said editorial negligence is tantamount to complicity. If Miss Brooks has a single shred of decency, she would resign. My hope is that people who have committed criminality at the News of the World end up going to prison. Are you listening to that? People who have committed criminality should end up going to prison. Oh, by the way, interestingly, this hour is sponsored by Glenn from the UK. I'm sorry that I'm doing this on a night when you sponsor the first hour, Glenn. His message, happy birthday on July 7th, to Rose. Chris Bryant, a member of Parliament. People are rightly angry. Why were these allegations not investigated sufficiently at an earlier stage? Yvette Cooper, a member of Parliament. News International has entered the criminal underworld. James Murdoch should be suspended from office while the police now investigate what I believe was his personal authorization to plan a cover-up of the scandal. I'm sorry, that was Tom Watson. Frank Dobson, member of parliament, said, quote, "We're News International. With their record of wrongdoing, they have admitted so far to apply to run a minicab firm. They would not receive a license." Frank Dobson, member of parliament. Ed Miliband, member of parliament, quote, "The biggest press scandal in modern times, getting worse by the day. This was not the action of some rogue reporter. Rebecca Brooks, the CEO, should take responsibility and resign." Okay. That's enough. You know, I can imagine that our 37 listeners are sitting back saying, what in the hell is he talking about a British newspaper? What's that got to do with all the crises we're facing in the United States? Well, I'll tell you what, wavering truth seeker, if you cannot connect the dots between the Rupert Murdoch terrorist organization in the UK and the Rupert Murdoch terrorist organization in the US, then you have my deepest pity. Because you obviously don't have a clue as to what is going on. How political discourse in this country, not just political discourse, but political activity has been so twisted. At a time when this country, when the UK, when the whole goddamn world needs competent, truthful leadership. And what does Fox News do here in the United States? They fill the airwaves every single day with distortions, lies, deceit, fraud, criminal activity. It is criminal activity when they're protected by the U.S. Constitution and they lie and lie and lie. And what does Murdoch do sitting on top of his mountain of money? He laughs his fascist ass off. Oh, yeah, Rude Pundit when we come back. Sponsored by Elise. Elise has a message. This would have been my sweet little Irish mom's 95th birthday. She was a fierce liberal, and I miss her. Love your show and never miss it. Warm regards, Elise. Elise, thank you very much. Sweet little Irish mom. 95th birthday. Well, happy birthday to your mother. Elise, thanks a lot for the sponsorship. We'll come back to that a little bit later. Lee Papa is the Rude Pundit. If you did what you were supposed to do as a good Mike Malloy program listener, you went to my website and you saw one of his latest vids. He is also the author of the Rude Pundit's Almanac. The New York Times refers to him, I'm reading right off of OR Books' website, a tornado of a writer, a child of Lenny Bruce, Richard Pryor, and Hunter S. Thompson. All right. He has a blog, rudepundit.blogspot.com. Thousands of readers each week go to that site and read what he has to say. And he's here with us. Well, not really here with us. Hi, Lee.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm okay. From New York, Lee Papa, the Rude Pundit. I've just gone nuts this past hour about the scandal with the Murdoch terrorist broadcast organization in the UK. I don't know if you've been following that, but
it's ridiculous. I find it almost hilarious that Murdoch, whose paper, that the Murdoch papers and Fox News that were attacking WikiLeaks left and right.
Yeah.
This is the scandal that apparently it was more important to spy on murdered kids than it was to reveal secrets about the government.
It's just astonishing. I've been saying on this program for about the past 4 years, what is it going to take? Is there a tipping point here? And if there is, I hope you find it and push as hard as you can and tip us all over into some kind of chaos that will result in a new world order emerging, one that is based... Oh, never mind.
I feel sometimes as if I'm tipping into despair, you know? and like you, I've been fighting this fight a long time, and every time I think that something's going to happen to turn things around, Republicans, bastards that they are able to just twist it around and contort America in such a way that we're forced to say things like I think one of the most appalling things that liberals say now is talking about Ronald Reagan and how Ronald Reagan was liberal compared to the gang in there now. But you remember, we thought he was the worst possible kind of president.
Yeah.
And now this is what we're reduced to.
What do you do stand up? Do you work clubs in New York?
I don't. I do readings. I'm actually a professor.
At City College in New York?
Yes, I'm at City University.
University, right. I don't mean to downgrade it there.
No, that's fine. It's just there's like 20-something campuses.
Yeah, CUNY. You're a professor at CUNY. In looking at your stuff, in reading some of your stuff, in reading the accolades that you've picked up from establishment press, I just have to ask, what stops you from doing live on stage, I guess we could call it comedy? Richard Pryor, I guess, did comedy. Although Richard Pryor was just an absolute genius, but what stops you from doing stand-up?
It's such a I have a lot of admiration for people that I get up there and do stand-up comedy. I hang out with a lot of stand-up comedians. I think it's just honestly it's more of a life decision that I get started in early enough to really get the ball rolling. I like doing, and I hope to do another one-man show that I've done. I've done two of them already, and those went really nicely. I'm a big fan of preaching to the converted. You know, you go to church if you're converted, and you like to hear the preacher. So I do like getting out there. The couple of readings that we've done have been terrific. And hopefully we'll get some more readings out there for the book.
The book is The Rude Pundit's Almanac. You can go to orbooks.com. In the bio information, it says you're from Louisiana. Were you there when Hurricane Katrina blew through?
I was not. I did go down a few months after and took a lot of time to take in all of the destruction. My family went through, well, I had many friends lose houses,
mm-hmm.
and many moved away and didn't come back. Some came back after wandering for a while. And my family was my immediate family, even though they lived 150 miles away, they had relatives that stayed with them for weeks on end, and family that lived in, or friends that lived in FEMA trailers. So I don't know if you got down there at all during...
No, I didn't, but I have people I know, friends, people who listen to this program, did spend time down there trying to help, doing volunteer work. And the stories I heard were just the images that we all saw on television. I've never seen anything like that. I really did believe when those images out of New Orleans, 3, 4, 5, 6 days after... the levees broke. I just figured, okay, that's it. This is the end of this country. If we're allowing people to experience what these people are experiencing, and then we have some freak in the Oval Office like Bush saying, right, you're doing a heck of a job, Brownie. You know, the world is ending. The world is coming to an end. Any moment, Rod Serling's going to come out and say, you have been spending time in the Twilight Zone.
I think that one of the saddest things about, and this is probably going to sound awful, but I think one of the saddest things about New Orleans during Katrina was, why didn't people riot?
Yeah.
I mean, why wasn't there an uprising at that moment?
Well, that's what I meant. Why wasn't some kind of response in other parts of the country? I mean, why didn't people in Ohio pour into the streets and start screaming about their brothers and sisters, their fellow American citizens in New Orleans? Nothing happened. Nothing happened, Lee.
You're asking for class consciousness from a nation that is told constantly, just stay in your individual lives. You know, don't be concerned about community. Don't look behind the curtain. And, you know, that we've been fed that for so long now that we see now that every time it seems like we're closer and closer to the brink, and still nothing happens. I don't know what knocks people from complacency anymore. I think take away their toys. Mm-hmm. That's what you need to do. You shut down the internet for 24 hours, people, then you'll get a riot. Mm-hmm. Then you'll get some activism. That's more than just clicking on a button on your screen.
That's so true. And the thing that is just not understandable to me is this attitude of I hate to refer to the U.S. Congress, the House and the Senate, especially the House, but this attitude that it is better to make sure that multimillionaires continue to be able to fly their private jets than it is to make sure that kids can go to school 5 days a week instead of four or four and a half in cities around the country because of this crisis, this never-ending financial crisis. And yet, that's what's happening. You know, you can't even get a surtax, a temporary tax, an end to the Bush tax cuts for the super rich in order to try to pull things back from the brink. And the American public sits on its ass and allows it to happen. Lee, help me, please.
Can you imagine? Think of this scenario. Think that the beginning of these of this debt ceiling negotiations, that the Democrats had come in and said, you know what? Screw you guys. Everything's off the table. It's a clean bill. We're not going to have any cuts. The media would have exploded with, I mean, there'd have been Sean Hannity's head fragments would have been filling the Fox studio because of the outrage over that. And yet what one of the most aggravating things about Obama is that he constantly buys into their rhetoric. He plays on their ball field.
Lee, let me put you on hold. I got to do some commercials. We'll come right back. Stay there, okay?
Sure.
All right. We're talking to Lee Papa, the Rude Pundit. Go to his website, his blog site. Go to OR Books. Buy the book. Listen to this guy. All right? We'll be right back.
Seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
Yeah, humble and obedient, my ass. We're talking with Lee Papa, who is the Rude Pundit. He has a book. He has a blog spot. Go to rudepundit.blogspot.com. He is a, well, New York Times calls him a tornado of a writer and a child of Lenny Bruce, Richard Pryor, and Hunter Thompson. Those are some powerful words of praise. Also, if you go to my website, MikeMalloy.com, you will find, on the front, on the main page, on the left side, the latest Rude Pundit, video. Lee, I don't think anything irritates me more than to hear what passes for journalists these days suggesting, I'm talking about print and electronic, suggesting that, you know, every side or both sides of the issues have to be talked about. There has to be politeness. There has to be balance. Does that make you crazy?
It does, because if you say that, then what you're saying is that the truth is negotiable.
Yeah, that's
and,
it, right.
and so where I thought the idea of journalism was to seek a truth and to report the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, one of the successes of the right, of the right-wing media, is in getting this notion that there are multiple sides to every story instead of there just being facts.
Mm-hmm. Let me say a word and just give me a quick indication of what you think, what that word evokes in you. Bachman. And I don't mean Bachman Turner Overdrive. Bachman.
Bachman. I think of Michelle Bachman as like every straight guy's first wife. You know, I knew she was crazy, but I didn't know she was that crazy.
Right.
I think that it's hilarious that she's getting this much traction. There's a certain flavor of the month quality about her.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope she ends up being the nominee because, I mean, as sadly our choice will come down to Obama or whoever Republicans decide to finally put up the sacrifice. And I think Bachman is would make for interesting and entertaining debates at least.
About the only good thing I can think of that Michelle Bachman has done is she has sent to the missing persons file. What's her name? The one from Alaska.
Palin. Yeah, nobody gives a shit about. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, right. Okay, hold on. While we take out the bad word, Lee.
Oh, good. You have a 7 second
yes,
delay.
Yes. Well, we have a longer than 7 second delay, but we are. It's better than MSNBC. That's for damn sure. It's longer than MSNBC. But yeah,
I gotta tell you, that's the first time I've done that on any radio show. Thank you, Mike. You've inspired me.
Yeah. Well, you know, if we were only on SiriusXM, which sometimes seems to me would be having a playground that you could really play in, it would be different. But
sure.
since we do have over-the-air broadcasters, we have to watch it.
Sure. Yeah.
What has been your biggest disappointment? Oh, boy, is this a half-witted question. Your biggest disappointment with Obama?
Boy, that's hard to pin down. Isn't
yeah,
it?
Right, that's what I'm saying.
I don't know. Maybe it was. I would say my biggest disappointment with Obama has been that he has not punished anybody for anything.
Right.
And that's just not. I know we're talking a lot now, and I think Frank Rich had that great article in New York Magazine this week that Obama failed in not punishing anybody from the financial industry.
Right.
But I think also he didn't come in and punish the Republican mob that was in there before for all of the abuses that happened before, and in fact embraced some of the worst. Some of the worst things about the powers that the Bush administration pushed for. But I think he missed an opportunity in really cleaning the slate and saying, no, we are not that country. We are a different country, and we will put our evildoers in jail.
You know, I agree that I hadn't thought of it before, but you put it very succinctly, letting the criminals, the bad guys, get off completely scot-free. And I wonder, I read a couple of commentaries, I don't know, maybe it was Rich, not in the column that you're referencing, but that Obama is stuck with the angry black man syndrome, that if he does kick ass and take names, then, you know, 350 years of racism in this country is going to come down on him even harder than it's come down now. I have to tell you, and I'm sure there are millions upon millions of people who literally don't see his color anymore. I mean, oh, yeah, when he gets up in front of a television camera, I say, hey, there's a man who's African-American or what appears
right.
to, you know, literally African-American. But when it comes to governing, that kind of slips into the wind. But I don't. But that's for me. I would imagine that Obama is terrified of getting the angry black man label hanged on him. Or hung
but
on him.
But the people that think that will think that no matter what he does. Those people have already been lost. And what he misread about his election is that people wanted payback. They wanted to see somebody get blamed for how deeply this country was run into the ground. And that was a missed opportunity. I'll tell you, that's what makes a country heal. When you get in there and punish somebody, I always go back to Romania. What did Romania do with the Ceausescu?
It murdered him.
They murdered them, and then, my favorite part of the story, right after they killed them, they outlawed capital punishment.
There you go. Hey, listen, Lee, can you stick around a little longer?
Sure, you bet.
Okay, hold on. We'll be right back. We're talking with the Rude Pundit, Lee Papa. Go to his website, rudepundit.blogspot.com. We'll be right back. For the hour, this is the Malloy program. This hour is sponsored by Elise. She writes, "This would have been my sweet little Irish mom's 95th birthday. She was a fierce liberal, and I miss her. Love your show. Never miss it. Warm regards, Elise." Elise, thank you. Appreciate the sponsorship and nice words about your mom. Lee Papa is a Rude Pundit. That's who we're talking to. Go to his blog site, rudepundit.blogspot.com. If you want to get a taste of what he does, go to my website and look at the video that I've put up there. Lee, this political season is as bad as the last one was. At least we had somebody who could make nice rhetoric, and that, of course, was not John McCain. But what's your take on what's going to happen this political season? Is the American public going to come out of the ether, even though all the voting machines are rigged? Is the American public going to come out of the ether and realize what the Republicans obviously are going to put up against Obama?
I don't think that there's. I'm a little, probably a little too optimistic about how easily I think Obama is going to win re-election. I don't think there's anybody that could get any traction against Obama at this point, unless some other crisis happens that throws the whole country into an uproar again. But otherwise, we keep getting things like it just came over that Obama is offering Social Security cuts now as part of the debt reduction deal.
Yeah.
And so there's this disheartening factor that we're going to hear rhetoric about how hard that it's been in the last 4 years. Obama will talk about how we're working together, and that'll be enough this time. And then what? Then Republicans will say Obamacare and whatever else. It's depressing. If it doesn't sound like I have any enthusiasm, it's because it's depressing. It's depressing in that Clinton Dole election kind of way.
Yeah, right.
Where you sat there and you thought, I remember standing in the voting booth and staring, thinking, okay, I know I'm not voting for Dole, but right, I don't want to vote for Clinton.
Right.
And eventually I talked myself into it by saying, okay, Supreme Court picks.
But that no longer applies since the Supreme Court is already gone. I mean, it's going right. So far to the right that anyone who still makes that argument, especially with this president, I truly believe. I'm not a big Obama fan, but on the other hand, I certainly don't see him quite as destructive as what's showing up on the Republican side. Although Obama, with his directives about how to handle extrajudicial assassinations and how to use drone aircraft against people and let's go invade another country. And, that thing I told you about Guantanamo, too busy right now. You know, all of this stuff, it's just, but Obama, do you not agree? Obama has the backing of the moneyed elite. No matter this talk about taxing the millionaires and the billionaires, the real constituency in this country are the investment bankers, and they're behind Obama like white on rice.
And he's courted that actively.
Yes.
And he's doing it now. I mean, you know, John Corzine is now actively doing it. He's mm-hmm. he's bringing Wall Street money to Obama. My phone is about to die, Mike.
Oh no.
Yes.
Well, then I guess that means we're going to have to say adieu and adios and thank you a lot, Lee, for showing up on the program tonight.
Thanks a lot. We can do it again.
Okay, take care, Lee.
You too.
All right, bye-bye. Lee Papa, the rude pundit whose phone is dying. Oh, no. Or did he just not like the way we were? No, that couldn't be. No. Nice guy. A hell of a blogger and pundit and whatever. If you would, please spend a little time at his blog site, rudepundit.blogspot.com, or check out his latest video that we've posted at mikemalloy.com. All right? Well, hell, Kathy, I was going to talk to him a little bit more. What do we do now? How about if we just play some music. Andre writes, Obama is punishing people. We were spending some time there, Lee and I, talking about how the biggest disappointment is Obama wasn't punishing anybody. He is. Bradley Manning, prisoners at Guantanamo, the poor, the jobless. And Jeanette says about the same thing. Julian Assange, Bradley Manning, he's prosecuting more whistleblowers than all previous presidents combined. Really? I'd say, Jeanette writes, he's punishing the people of Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Pakistan, Yemen, and Somalia, host of other people more indirectly, Haiti, Bahrain, and so on and so on. Yeah. And the Social Security cuts, what is that? Apparently, it's in the Washington Post here. Obama is pressing congressional leaders to consider a far-reaching debt reduction plan that would force Democrats. Force Democrats? What is he? To accept major changes to Social Security and Medicare in exchange for Republican support for fresh tax revenue. At a meeting with top House and Senate leaders set for tomorrow morning, Obama plans to argue that a rare consensus has emerged about the size and scope of the nation's budget problems and that policymakers should seize the moment to take dramatic action. What the hell does that mean? Obama plans to argue that a rare consensus emerged about the size and scope of the nation's budget problems. There were no budget problems. Until George W. Bush was appointed president. There were no budget problems. So Obama is going to force Democrats? Oh my God. Oh my God. As part of his pitch, Obama is proposing significant reductions in Medicare spending for the first time, is offering to tackle the rising cost of Social Security, according to people in both parties with knowledge of the proposal. The move marks a major shift for the White House and could present a direct challenge to Democratic lawmakers who have vowed to protect health and retirement benefits from the assault on government spending. A major shift for the White House? This is not a major shift. Obama, you know, Bill Clinton was Republican light. And except for the fact of several of his pieces of legislation. He could have been, he could have been a hell of a Democratic president, but he chose to be Republican light. And because he was Republican light, he left the country in fairly good financial shape. There's no question about that, that the Bush crime family immediately destroyed by giving all the money, all those trillions out on the horizon to the people who are already millionaires and billionaires. So for Obama to now pretend, and that's what I think he does, he pretends like the financial crisis that we're dealing with, the breakdown in the idea that the social safety net that has been in place in this country for 80 years must now be destroyed in order to satisfy who, Mr. President? In other words, Obama's buying into this debt thing, like the national debt or the budget deficit is a big goddamn deal, which it is not. Well, this man will not, and I don't care, don't send me emails, please. All you hardline Yellow Dog Democrats, don't send me an email and tell me I'm sick and out of my mind. But Barack Obama will not get my vote. I may sit this one out. I just may, like a lot of people did in the midterm elections. I will not any longer support this kind of madness. I will not do it. I will not do it. If you want to vote for Obama because you think, well, if I don't, Bachman or whoever will become president. If that's what you want to do, go ahead, vote for him. But I swear on this dictionary that I will not be voting for Barack Obama for all the reasons I've been talking about for the past 3 years. This is insane. This is insane. And the Post goes on to say, rather than roughly $2 trillion in savings, the White House is now seeking a plan that would slash more than $4 trillion from annual budget deficits over the next decade, stabilize borrowing, and defuse the biggest budgetary time bombs that are set to explode as the cost of health care rises and the nation's population ages. There was a very simple way to handle this. It was called single-payer health care, A. B, take the goddamn Pentagon and blow it up! There's $1 trillion a year right there, Mr. President!
America, one flying monkey at a time. It's more Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Elise. And her message is, this would have been my sweet little Irish mom's 95th birthday. She was a fierce liberal, and I miss her. Love your show and never miss it. Warm regards, Elise. You know, oddly, this year would have been my mother's 95th birthday, too. Not today, but this year. Thanks, Elise. It's a nice dedication, and thanks a lot for sponsoring an hour of the program. Back again to this Washington Post article that Barb sent me the link to. It says while Democrats will be asked to cut social safety net programs, Republicans will be asked to let tax breaks for the nation's wealthiest households expire on schedule at the end of next year. And the Washington Post calls that raising taxes. Son of a bitch. Democrats would be asked to cut social safety net programs. Republicans would be asked to, quote, raise taxes, perhaps by letting tax breaks for the nation's wealthiest households expire on schedule at the end of next year. In other words, I can't even say it. I can hardly get the words out. In other words, what the Republicans are being asked to do is nothing. Nothing. The extension that Obama gave to the millionaires and the billionaires, not to use an overworked phrase, that extension runs out next year. So all the Republicans have to agree to do is nothing. While the Democrats have to agree to slash the social safety net that has been carefully as possible in a capitalist society like this sick one, put together over the past 80 years. The Post goes on to say the administration argues, that would be Barack Obama, argues that lawmakers would also get an important victory to sell to voters in 2012. What? What victory? That the Republicans had to do nothing? And the trillions of dollars that have gone into the pockets of the super wealthy in this country over the past 8, 9, 10 years will run out by legislative direction. I mean, the original plan was to stop in 10 years, and you saw what happened when it was ready to run out. These filthy cockroach Republicans start screaming that Obama is trying to commit class warfare, raise taxes on the wealthy, blah, 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 blah. When all Obama had to do was shut his goddamn mouth and let the law take care of it. But he didn't. And now this? No, I'll tell you what's going to happen. What I'd like to see happen, I'd like to see this August 2nd self-imposed deadline come, no agreement be made, and let the whole damn thing collapse. Let it collapse for a day or two or a week. Let it really, really start to hurt the people that never get hurt. And then see what happens. Obama. Obama is now seeking a plan that would slash more than $4 trillion over the next decade. And the thing that gets me, a Democratic official familiar with the administration's thinking, that would be Obama's thinking, says the following, quoted in the Washington Post, quote, obviously, there will be some Democrats who don't believe we need to do entitlement reform. Entitlement. But there seems to be some hunger to do something of some significance. These moments come along at most once a decade, and it would be a real mistake if we let it pass us by, end quote. Can you believe this? Of course you can. Because like me, you live in this fantasy world that has been constructed by what used to be the Democratic Party and this vicious, filthy, teabag-owned Republican Party. What's it going to take? What's it going to take before the American public says, okay, that's it? What's it going to take? What's it going to take? Medicaid is going to end. I mean, literally end. I don't care what they're talking about. You know, the health insurance, as crappy and filthy as it is, it's the health insurance of last resort for really, truly poor people. And what does Obama care? What the Republicans care? What the Democrats care? Not a bit. Not a bit. But as far as the weapons manufacturers in this country, they're going to whistle right along as though nothing happened. The oil companies are going to continue to kill you and kill your kids and your grandchildren and make their profits. I don't know where they're going to spend it. Have these people developed some kind of space travel? Do they have a, have they found a wormhole that leads to another dimension that is similar to this one, but hasn't been destroyed yet? Where do these cockroaches think they're going to live? Medicaid. Well, all right, we'll be back after the break. We're going to open up the phone lines. And if you want to call in, the number is 877-996-2556. The hour. This is the Malloy program. Chris Hedges had something he posted on July 4th at Truth Dig. Under the heading, Ralph Nader is tired of running for president. I'm not going to do the whole thing here like I usually do. Chris Hedges is a scary writer. He's very scary because he has this, he's sworn this absolute fealty to the truth. And because of that oath that Chris Hedges has obviously taken, it's difficult sometimes to read and process what he's written into this essay that's currently up. He says there's no shortage of courageous dissidents in America. He's referring to those among us who are trying to resist. He says they seek, these dissidents, seek to thwart the imperial disasters, looming financial insolvency, and suicidal addiction to fossil fuel. They have stood in small knots on street corners week after week. Remember the woman from Iowa last night? Month after month, year after year, to denounce the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. They have occupied banks, shut down coal-fired plants, attempted to halt mountaintop removal, like Bob Kincaid, interfered with whaling ships, and walked in blustery weather to the White House, where they were arrested. They are struggling to break the Israeli blockade of Gaza on a ship called the Audacity of Hope. But because the corporate state and the two major political parties are indifferent to principled calls for reform, and because the mass of the public still buys into the myths of globalization and the American dream, the plundering and the destruction continue unimpeded. He says, when most Americans face the nightmare before us, when they realize the irreversible devastation unleashed on the ecosystem and the economic misery from which they cannot escape, violence will have a broad and terrifying appeal. Those of us who demand a return to the rule of law and remain steadfast to nonviolence will find ourselves cast aside the useful idiots Lenin so despised. I watched this happen in the social and political implosions in El Salvador, Guatemala, the Palestinian territories, Algeria, Bosnia, and Kosovo. I watched the same cocktail of despair, economic collapse, and callousness from a corrupt power elite mix itself into a potent brew of civil strife. I watched the same untiring efforts by those who detested the violence and cruelty of the state and the nascent violence and intolerance of the radical opposition. I covered, as a reporter, the disintegration that tore these societies apart. And then he adds this, the death of liberal institutions. Think about what I just shared with you from the Washington Post. The death of liberal institutions that once made incremental and piecemeal reform possible, which once could respond to the suffering of the poor, the unemployed, and working men and women, which once sought to protect the earth on which we depend for life, means the death of these institutions means the last thin hope for reform is embodied in acts of civil disobedience. There are no established institutions that will help us. The press ignores the cries of the underclass and the poor. The labor movement is atrophied and dying. Public education is degraded and being rapidly dismantled. Our religious institutions no longer engage in the core issues of justice. And the Democratic Party is on its knees before Wall Street. The most basic government services designed to ameliorate the pain, including Head Start and Social Security, are targeted by our corporate overlords for destruction. The Kyoto Protocol, which was not nearly ambitious enough to prevent environmental collapse, has been gutted. So companies like ExxonMobil can continue to amass the largest profits in history. Radical reform, including a breaking of our dependence on fossil fuel, must happen soon to thwart the effects of dramatic climate change and economic disintegration. And this radical reform will come only through us. For this reason, I will join those planning the prolonged occupation of Washington, D.C. on October 6th. Acts of civil disobedience are our last thin line of defense against chaos. Make a resolution this Independence Day to join us. You owe it to your children and to the generations who come after us. I am not naive enough to promise you we can reverse these trends. I know the monolith we challenge. But I do know that if we do not begin to take part in these nonviolent protests, then we have, in effect, given up all realistic hope of change and succumbed meekly to corporate enslavement, environmental catastrophe, and severe social unrest. And there's more, much more here, but please keep that in mind this October. I will be there if I'm alive. I hope you will. I hope millions of people. I hope it'll happen. I have my doubts. But I can't help but continue to wonder what has happened to the backbone, the courage, the strength of, if no other institution, the Democratic Party. What has happened to the fearsomeness of organized labor? What has happened to the absolute determination of the peace and justice movement? What happened to the idea And not speaking in the code words that Nixon used to pervert this idea, but the rule of law, the real rule of law, equal justice under the law, equal protection under the law. What happened to all that? Did that, was that just a BS illusion? Did that never really exist? All that stuff that I'm referring to, that Chris Hedges refers to, that so many people are referring to on the so-called political left, was that just never there? Have we always had Michelle Bachmann's and Sarah Palin's and Barack Obama's and George W. Bush's? Has it always been this way? I don't know. One starts to doubt one's perceptions of what's real and what's not real. Because how could it have been that if all those strengths of character that I think we had, maybe it never existed, but if it did exist, and it's gone this quickly, one generation, phew, gone, or was it two? Gone. Then what are we left with? If it was all illusion, if the determination to eventually bring justice to this society, because everything is built on justice, if that never existed, then what have we been doing? As Dan Rather said, somebody said to him, what's the frequency?
Look away from Dixieland, look away. Look away.
Truth seekers, gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
The hour. Glenn in the UK, who has sponsored the first hour tonight, sent me an email. I didn't get it until we were talking with Lee Papa, the Rude Pundit. I want to share it with you now. He writes, hello, Mike. Of course, it's abominable behavior by News International staff and their hacking of the mobile phones of victims of serial killers, and quite unbelievable that they would delete messages to free up space for more. Since voicemail was already full of hysterical, desperate messages from friends and relatives, our brave news hounds wouldn't be able to obtain even more of the same without deleting messages they had already heard. But is anyone really surprised? This is par for the course with Murdoch's filthy empire. The real problem is that the majority of British people continue to buy his wretched papers, watch Fox, watch Sky, and so are paying Murdoch's crew to go around behaving just like this. If they didn't sell, they wouldn't run stories that involve such methods. It does show how corrupt and contemptible our culture secretary is for wanting to hand Murdoch an even bigger share of UK media. But mostly it shows the British public has a salacious appetite for lurid detail of the most degenerate nature, not only occasionally, but day after day for generations. How can anyone seriously criticize the nature of a product when it happens to be a bestseller? Glenn in the UK. I honestly believe, in this country anyway, that watching anything that's on the so-called Fox News channel is an act of direct treason against the United States. Anything on Fox News Channel. Any program, any public service announcement, any commercial, even having the damn thing on your cable system in your house, like I do, indicates how serious corporate America is in destroying everything, or capitalist America. But turning that sucker on, you people who are listening on Sirius and XM driving around tonight, who watch Fox and monitor this program because it makes your, what part of your anatomy makes it quiver, but it does, doesn't it? You little cockroaches. Just turning on Fox means that you hate this country and you are committing an act of treason with your hatred. Just keep that in mind. Every single time you turn it on, whatever program you watch, that clownish collection of freaks in the morning, all the different programs during the day, at night, this pig Bill Riley, O'Reilly, just turning on Fox indicates how much you despise your own country, you hypocrite. You get my drift? Nora is in Minneapolis, listening on, excuse me, KTNF. Hello, Nora.
Oh, hi there, Mike. Yeah, I gave up my TV 5 months ago and threw lace over it. I like the lace better, and I'm a lot more calm.
Yeah.
But I called to talk about Social Security. I'm going to tell you two things that I know about Social Security and ask you what's wrong with this picture. The people that desperately need it get about $800 or $900 a month every month, approximately $10,000 a year. And then all these other mofos that already have incomes of like $50,000, $100,000, whatever, get like they get many thousands per month from Social Security, and that, where it adds up to like, I don't know, $30,000 a year or whatever. And then those of us, many, there's jillions of us sitting down here getting $800, $900 a month trying to survive and saying, they could fix this by taking a big chunk out of those people that don't need jack out of this and take at least half of theirs off and give it to some of us, because this is cruel what they're doing to all these desperate, pathetic, poor, poverty-stricken people that have to try to live on about $800 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think they're getting ready to do, in my opinion. I guess I might be completely illusionary idealist, but I think that's what Obama's intending to do. I think he's intending to knock off some of the people that don't need no damn money from Social Security, that are getting many tens of thousands per year, and those of us sitting here suffering on $800 a month.
Well, you know, there's no way of telling, Nora, what evil lurks in the heart of Barack Obama. Not that he's an evil man. He's just a piss-poor leader. But there's no telling what he's trying to do, what he has in mind for this meeting tomorrow. Obama starts from a position of total defeat and then works backwards. So, you know, just tickling the newspapers with the idea that he's going to try to alter Social Security is enough for me. I don't like this guy. I don't like him even more, in a sense, than I didn't like Bush. I knew Bush was a fascist son of a bitch. Barack Obama, well, it's not really his fault. I did it myself. Barack Obama offered up the rhetoric, and I bought into the lie. Here, Nan is in St. Louis, listening on Sirius XM.
Did you say Nan?
Yes. Hi, Nan.
Oh, hi, Mike. Hey, I have some incredible information about Social Security that I haven't heard anybody talk about. And that is, in the year 2000, when Bush took office, the Social Security Trust Fund had $5.6 trillion surplus. They used that entire $5.6 trillion to cover up the Bush tax cuts. When he left office, $2.7 trillion had been returned, well, kind of, in an IOU of Treasury bills of $2.7 trillion. $2.9 trillion of that $5.6 has not been accounted for. Nobody, not a single Democrat that I have heard has ever brought this up. And the way that it got a $5.6 trillion surplus, oh, and you can verify this. I no longer have a computer, so I can't send you a link. But you can easily verify this at NASI.org. If you go to that website and look up the year, the 2000, see what the trust fund was in the year 2000, it'll tell you it's $5.6 trillion.
What's the website again?
NASI.org.
F like Frank?
Excuse me?
N-A-F like Frank, I.org?
No, F like Sam.
Sam, N-A-S-I, okay.
N-A-S-I.
Yeah, that's interesting. I haven't heard that either. I don't know how any of this high finance works when people start talking about government trust funds and money taken here and money put there and hedge funds and derivatives. I hate to say it, but I'm lost. It's one area that I'm going to get a chuckle here. It's one area where I have total ignorance. All the right wingers are going one area of my ass. Yeah, go ahead, Nan.
Okay, there's also another $3 trillion unaccounted for. That on September 10th, 2001, Donald Rumsfeld on CBS.
Oh yeah, about the Pentagon. Yeah.
Yeah, that he couldn't account for $3 trillion from the Pentagon. So right there is $6 trillion. Totally unaccounted for by from the Bush administration. That should be returned to the people. But to say that there's anything wrong with Social Security, and this came from the trustee of the Social Security Trust Fund, the four people that actually enacted the 83 reform to the trust fund, and this is what they said, that nothing should be done with Social Security whatsoever, because they said, we don't even know what we did, because there are yet two. They made five cuts to Social Security. Three of those have been enacted. Two of them have yet to be enacted and won't be until the year 2030. And they said, so nothing should be done with Social Security, because there are still yet two more cuts to come to Social Security by the year 2030 that they themselves enacted. And there's nothing, there should be, I mean, Social Security had more than enough money to cover the baby boomers, because Greenspan and Reagan told the American public that if they doubled the Social Security payroll tax at that time, what they were taking, if they doubled that, then there would be money to cover Social Security. They went to the American public. 70% of the public said they wanted them to do that. They wanted it doubled and increased because they wanted the security of Social Security to be there for the baby boomers in the year 2010, and so they did.
Well, I'm sure that was one of the five tax increases that came about under Ronald Reagan. Listen, that's all. I will go to this website, Nan. That's a lot of information. I'll try to check it out. And thank you so much. I do appreciate you checking in, all right? Take care. Yeah, five tax increases under Ronald Reagan, instituted, of course, by his administration, not by Democrats, but by the Reagan administration. These filthy cockroach Republicans now seem to forget that, don't they? William is in Santa Fe, listening on KTRC. William, hi.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, can you get me off a speakerphone?
All right.
Okay, I'm sorry. It just makes it...
Okay, here, mind me this way.
Thank you.
All right. Well, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
All right, I was just thinking that maybe I've listened to you for as many as 17 years, even though I've never talked to you.
Holy Toledo.
Yeah, my daughter was born, and so I kind of remember the date. But anyway, Mike, I just went to Los Alamos today to some photographs of what is left of the fires there.
At Los Alamos?
What did you say?
You went to Los Alamos. You're fading in and out, William. I don't know why we're having a problem here. I'll tell you what. Let me put you on hold. Kathy will try to work it out for you. She'll pick up here. Don't hang up, because I do want to hear what you got to say about Los Alamos. Warren is in Revere, Massachusetts, listening on Sirius. Hello, Warren.
Hey, what's up, Mike?
You are.
Yeah. I'm always like a little bit nerved out when I get on the radio.
Oh,
know?
Really? No.
Yeah, just a little, but you know, I don't go to pieces about it.
There you go.
You know, I'm thinking along the lines of some of the last few callers. You know, on the Social Security issue, I get a disability check. You know, and it's for, you know, mental illness. I prefer to refer to it as,
right.
You know, I don't know, it's like emotional wreckage, really. You know?
Right. Well, you know, people in your position will be some of the first that are going to be slammed.
Oh, I know it. And before, where I obtained these problems that I do have, you know, I've been going to therapy for years. I've been, you know, taking meds for years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been living in the subsidized apartment now for about 5 years. And before that, I spent 7 years sleeping in alleys and doorways. And you wouldn't believe some of the weird places, you know, that I would crawl into to get a rest from the
mm-hmm.
get some rest from the world, you know.
Right.
And you know, I live, you know, in like, you know, pretty much sheer terror a lot of the time, because, you know, sometimes I think I shouldn't, you know, pay attention to the political thing for my own good, but I can't.
Right. Yeah,
I can't do that. That's not an option, you know?
Yeah.
And every month or two, you know, these tea baggerers and Republicans are pulling the same exact routine of political extortion on this president, who I don't like in the least either. You know, I see them all as kind of, you know, part of the same
mm-hmm.
political class,
mm-hmm.
and I don't see a dime's worth of difference, you know. I lean very far to the left, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just every 2 months, you know, I have to go through this. What are they going to do this time? What's going to happen this time? You know, how's it going to end this time? You know, is this the time that I'm going to be thrown back out onto the street? You know what I mean?
Right.
And I mean, I'm diabetic. I've got more health problems than I had back then. I know that I'm not going to, you know, live as long. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And earlier and, you know, perennially on your show, the question comes up, you know, what's it going to take?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you that, you know, they throw me back out there to die. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
When I've got absolutely nothing left to lose,
right,
to that degree, my attitude, I know where my attitude's going to be. You know what I mean?
Yeah, this is exactly what Chris Hedges is writing about, and part of which his latest piece that I quoted tonight. When people, he didn't say this, but I'm saying, when people get to the point where they realize that there is an element in the society that is just bleeding the society dry, and that element, as powerful as it is, doesn't care, just simply does not, it's totally amoral where it concerns people on disabilities or hungry children or single parents or the unemployed or people who are struggling, don't know what the hell hit them. When it gets to the point where the public understands just how immune these people are, that's when the potential for violence is at its peak. And it's at that point, and this is what Hedges was writing about, it's at that point that the people who believe in a creative, nonviolent response to these bastards. That's where they have to prevail. Whether or not nonviolence can prevail in an atmosphere that is screaming for violence is something that I think America is going to find out about in the not too distant future. Warren, I got to leave it there, pal. Thank you very much for checking in. I appreciate it. Take care. Stay in touch, all right? Stay in touch with us. We'll be right back.
Yeah. Who are people gonna rise up and take what's there?
Program. Let's try William again in Santa Fe. All right, William, let's try it again.
Yeah, hi, Mike.
That's a lot better.
It's better.
Yes.
Okay, good. Anyway, yeah, I went to Los Alamos to check it out. The fire basically has gone on the west side past Los Alamos, and it's now up north, but it has meanwhile burned up about 120,000 so acres.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it's, the main cores are farther north, you can see that even within 2-3 miles of Los Alamos, things are burning.
Mm-hmm.
And if the wind were to change to the west, would be a dangerous situation, possibly. So that I did, but basically, there was not a big nuclear fire like there was in 2000. In 2000, actually, the same side of the laboratory that was licked by the fire this time in 2000, actually, kind of the fire went through there, and there were underground storage bunkers there that nobody knew anything about, and they burned up to, like maybe 6 weeks after the rest of the fire was already died down. They couldn't get it out.
Do you work there, William?
No, I'm part of the Los Alamos Study Group. We are a activist group that actively tries to expose the mission of Los Alamos and the money that is being spent there on things that we feel is illegal in terms of the treaties that we have signed in like the NPT treaty, the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty.
Does your organization have a website? I'd like to what is it?
LASG.
LAS like Sam?
Yeah, G.
G.
Los Alamos Study Group.
Okay.
Yeah, Los Alamos Study Group. LASG.org. That is it. That is everything.
.org. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so Mike, but the other thing I wanted to really talk to you about in terms of Los Alamos. Los Alamos has been planning a new building, a new facility in Los Alamos. It's called CMRR Building. It's it's an acronym, but basically it's the new facility for modernized nuclear weapons that actually in the START Treaty was agreed to between Russia and the United States of America, that is being a go-ahead, like, okay, we do less, but we will modernize.
Mm-hmm.
And so
right.
this facility, the CMRR, would be the factory to modernize the nuclear arsenal. It is a 400,000 square feet building. It's slated to hold as much as 6 metric tons of plutonium.
Oh my
and,
God!
really. I mean, so it's not just a fire-prone place. They have found out in the last 10 years or 15 years, actually, through the activities of some of our members of the Los Alamos Study Group, that actually the area is also much more earthquake-prone than they ever could have imagined. And so this building, this 400,000 square feet building that is going to cost the community $6 billion, is going to be built on top of a earthquake fault that now the building has to withstand a 7 magnitude earthquake because it'd be right underneath it. And so this is kind of like an impossible task to do. And so this building has gone up from a price tag of about $200 million in 2003 to no less than $6 billion right now. And the Obama administration, they are nuclear hawks.
Mm-hmm.
They like everything nuclear. And they like this building. As a matter of fact, the Republicans, they said, oh, we're not going to sign on to the start unless you give us this building.
Right.
And so Obama has made like a tremendous effort to get this done because it's probably, you know, one of the very few peacemaking treaties that he will sign in his life. So,
it will turn out the whole thing is a fraud, though.
Well, it is a fraud.
Yeah,
the start is a fraud because it doesn't really significantly reduce nuclear weapons. It is a modernization agreement between Russia and America to modernize the arsenal, make more precise bombs, more deeper bombs that can go deeper and whatnot, bombs that can split up, bombs this way and that way, smaller ones, larger ones, whatever, whatever they're going to need. And so this was the START treaty. Well, officially, it also reduces the absolute amount of bombs. Well, you know, if you count hard, it'd be like maybe we saved maybe 180 bombs.
I'll tell you what, William. We're just about out of time. I'm so glad you called in tonight because I had not heard of the Los Alamos Study Group, and now that I have the website and our listeners do, I'm sure we'll be checking out. William, please call in again. We're flat out of time for tonight. I appreciate what you had to say. That's it for us tonight. Thanks for tuning in. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
Becky, thank you.